Everybody to the Untold History Channel, and this is take two of Operation Gladio part five. No, but it's still giving me issues. It says we're having trouble streaming to your destination, and it's to the Colonel's one, so it will not for some reason let me connect you to that, and I don't know why. If you want to give people mine, I don't know, and I don't know what to do because we should probably figure this out when it's not, when we're down, when it's downtime.
Yeah.
So that we don't have this issue, kind of do it like the military would.
Yeah.
Since we're military people, train. So I just sent you, I'm going to send you a link to mine so that you can pass that out to your peeps.
Hold on just a second. Let me check something out.
Okay.
Where's this?
Sorry, guys. Trying to figure this out. Rumble changed how they do things, and I'm not 100% sure what's going on and why. But we're just trying to make it so that everything is working properly. Okay, Mel and Spira, I see you. Okay, can you give me a 5-5? Let me know everything is working. Okay, good. Thank you. We will be starting shortly, guys. Just waiting on the Colonel to come back. There she is.
Okay. Try that one more time.
Okay, what do you want me to try?
Just streaming it to mine.
Okay. Do you want me to put the... go here and go to the destinations and change.
Hold on.
Did the numbers or anything change?
Hold on just a second. No.
Okay.
All right. Now, go ahead and do it, whatever you're going to do.
Okay. Okay, so I brought it back in and still...
It'll take a minute because mine's got like several seconds delays when I do it.
Okay. Well, it looks like it's going to YouTube and Twitter.
Yeah, it's doing it.
It is on the Rumble. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Good. We're good to go then. Excellent. Right. Welcome, everybody. Sorry for the technical difficulties, but we figured it out. Finally. I do not know how what happened, but it's a miracle.
We'll take it.
We'll take it. Exactly. A win is a win. That's what happens when the Air Force and the Navy get together. We can try to work things out. So, but anyway, how are you today?
I'm great.
Yeah, I wanted to watch some of the stuff that you did earlier with the Badlands guys, but my phone rang and I was on the phone.
I got sidetracked
and I didn't get to. My good friend and supporter Mel in New Hampshire said that I should just take a ball peen hammer to it and see if that works.
Hey, that's my tool of choice.
Exactly. Well, I can think of a few other tools of choice that might work even better. Sure, it should give you a lot more satisfaction. You know, they typically use a trigger. Yeah,
that's not a tool.
Yeah, well, it depends on who you're talking to.
That's a toy.
Yeah, this is true. So, anyway, okay, so yeah, everything seems to be working hunky dory. So, all right, well, today I think what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about Gladio and how it relates to Iran-Contra.
Yes, we are.
So, I will let the floor is yours, madam.
Okay. So most people are aware of Iran-Contra, and it's kind of in this bucket over here. And then more recently, people who have been following us understand Operation Gladio is over here. Mm-hmm. Until you rerun some of these old movies through the Operation Gladio metrics.
Glasses.
It's hard to see the how they interact with each other. So we have been going around the world and taking both operations and countries and kind of running them through the Gladio glasses. And there's an amazing correlation between most of them. So we wanted to dig a little so that people could understand. And you have to, when you start talking, and let me just preface one more thing, just for anybody new, the Gladio wagon wheel, the outside of the wheel is Gladio. You have a spoke for drug trafficking, arms trafficking, and human trafficking. And blackmail is the grease on the axle that keeps the wheel turning. So that's kind of my 5-second overview of what Operation Gladio is. It's a paramilitary entity used by NATO and the globalists in order to destroy countries, rob them of their resources, and put this wagon wheel in operation. Smuggle drugs, smuggle arms, smuggle people with a little bit of blackmail mixed in the middle. And so having said that, we're required from a historical standpoint to go back and look at some of these countries. And in particular, when we talk about Iran, they use the word Contra, but it's actually Iran, Nicaragua. That's the two countries that was right. Primarily involved in this operation. And the Contras were people inside of Nicaragua, and we're going to do a little bit of history lesson on who they actually were to put this entire thing in context so you can see it a little better with your Gladio glasses on. So basically,
I'd like to ask a question before you jump into this, and because this, as I understand it, this was the primary reason that they used Nicaragua was because Reagan was so anti-communist, and what they did that them, this was more a tactic to get it under the nose of Reagan and have his support because he was like, hey, look, the communists are at our back door. They're at our southern doorstep. We need to do something. And so that was, as I understand it, it was a mechanism to get Reagan's support.
So if I tell you that was the argument they used for every single thing they did, does that make a difference?
No.
Because every single time, every single operation was justified as we're fighting communists. Does that mean there was a single communist in Nicaragua? No.
Does that mean that there was
a single communist in any of these countries where they orchestrated coups? Absolutely not.
And I'm not, and maybe I didn't frame the question properly, but my thought here was is that they were trying to pull the wool over Reagan's eyes.
I personally don't believe that because Reagan, in my experience, in looking into all of this, because you have to go back to how Reagan even became governor. He was in bed with the mafia out in Los Angeles, right? Wasserman, he cut him some deals. Wasserman got him the job as the president of the Actors Screen Guild. He granted a waiver to Wasserman as a result of him helping him get that job so that he could run both a movie studio and a talent entity, because at the time they were not allowed to own both. And Reagan authored him his own waiver to do that and did not give anybody else any. So he basically monopolized the entire thing out there. That was kind of his payback. And so Reagan, as much as many of us did not want to believe it, was very much in bed with all of these same people. And there's lots more examples, but that's kind of the cursory beginning one. And there's many that goes along with that.
Oh, so, I agree with that. I firmly agree with that because I do believe that Reagan was not nearly as pure and white as snow as a lot of people want to think he was.
They always use "we're fighting the communist" as the reason why they did every single Gladio operation.
Correct. That's absolutely correct.
So, anyway, the key to understanding Nicaragua is beginning with the basically what you would refer to as the royal family of Nicaragua, which back in the day was the Somoza, Somoza family. Mm-hmm. And it's important to understand their role in all of this. They were basically the royal family of Nicaragua from about 1936 to 1979. So you see how that kind of plays with the Reagan comes in 19. The election is 1980, and then he comes in 81. So we're going to go back and review a little bit of the history of Nicaragua. So Nicaragua has a revolution that lasted about 10 years, and it was fought to liberate Nicaragua from the U.S. imperialist and basically the repressive Somoza dictatorship, which basically the U.S. had installed there so they could monopolize the resources there. And this began early in the 1960s with the founding of the Sandinista National Liberation Front. It's the FSLN, and we're just going to refer to them as the Sandinistas. So basically, it starts ramping up and kind of hits a climax in the middle of the 1970s. They were the modern day equivalent of what you and I would call freedom fighters if we actually had the truth about what was going on in any one country. They were trying to kick the imperialist out. Unfortunately, the imperialist happened to be us. It culminated in the fighting between the Sandinistas and what was used within Nicaragua as the National Guard. And this happened around 1978, 1979. So when the Sandinistas succeeded in overthrowing the dictatorship, the Sandinistas basically ruled for like from 79 to 90, which is kind of considered to be when the revolution ended. So going back in time a little bit, in 1937, Nicaragua underwent another coup, which basically resulted in this guy being installed. His name was Anastasio Somoza Garcia. And he basically came up through the U.S.-trained National Guard and overthrew a democratically elected president whose name was Juan Sakasa. So the Somoza guy was basically in charge for the next 20 years and basically ruled through the use of the National Guard and was very sadistic, very wanting to please the U.S. The CIA was involved in the coup that overthrew the duly elected government there. Not the CIA, sorry, the U.S. government. Sorry. No. And that's the reason why I think this is so important is because I've made this point repeatedly. All of the elements that got put under the umbrella of the CIA existed before the CIA. So whether you're talking about the industrialist intel entities, and they took very different shapes. Obviously, we didn't have the CIA or the NSA, but we did have intelligence capability. And we also had crooks. We had the mafia. We had all kinds of different elements. Basically, all of those elements post-World War II got moved over under the umbrella of the CIA. And the CIA began doing the exact same thing that all of these previous entities had been doing. And so when you look at the National Guard, I was unaware that we had spent so much time, not only in the Caribbean, like in the Dominican Republic, in Haiti, back in the early 1900s, invading all of these countries with Marines. I had no idea. That's not taught in any military school. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time throughout South America and in the Caribbean, basically overthrowing governments. So, and training what they refer to as National Guard down there to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So, they were notoriously corrupt, engaging in things like gambling, prostitution, smuggling, demanding bribes from citizens to even provide the necessary protection. And according to two political scientists, Thomas Walker and Christine Wade, quote, "The Guard was a sort of mafia in uniform, the personal bodyguards of the Somoza family," unquote. So he allowed the U.S. to establish a military base in Nicaragua during World War II and provided the CIA afterwards a training area in which to plan the coup that overthrew the democratically elected Guatemalan president. They also launched operations when the CIA overthrew Arbenz in Chile from Nicaragua. This base was used for many different Operation Gladio. And in South America, just as a reminder, it was referred to as Operation Condor in South America. Right. They basically used it as a launching pad or a staging place to conduct these operations all over South America. And Somoza was assassinated in 1956 by one of the citizens down there, and his son immediately assumes power. His son, so one son is going to be president and the other son takes over control of the National Guard and immediately begin more arrest, more imprisoning, more torture, more kidnapping. And the one son that takes over the presidency, his name is Lewis. So he continues this cozy relationship with the United States, allowing CIA-backed Cuban exiles, which I argue was our Operation Gladio network in Miami, mm-hmm. to embark from Nicaragua on when they were going to do the Bay of Pigs invasion. Several of the aircraft actually took off from Nicaragua. Mm. They trained down there. They had mock-ups of what they were going to be doing down there. And so the Sandinistas was founded in 1961 by a guy by the name of Carlos Fonseca. There were two other guys, Silvio Mayorga and Thomas Borge. So basically, the three of them kind of formed the leadership of the Sandinistas. And they were named after a guy by the name of Augusto Cesar Sandino, S-A-N-D-I-N-O. And he fought against the U.S. imperialism in Nicaragua way back in the 1920s. So after he succeeded in ousting the American troops in 1933, he was basically assassinated in 1934, assumed to be some of the infiltrators, if you will, from the United States, because they were ticked off that they got kicked out. Yeah.
Did I lose you? The colonel is frozen.
The goals of the,
huh? You froze for a second.
Oh, okay. The goals of the, yeah, there's a storm running through here right now. The goals of the Sandinistas were to continue Sandino's fight for national sovereignty and to take their country back from the United States domination. Mm-hmm. And they were willing to have a revolution to do that. As long as...
Well, I guess the storm kicked her out. let's see. Let's see here. Sorry, guys. Not sure if she lost power or not. We'll get her back. Apologize for this. Unfortunately, we have no control over technology. And she hasn't seen my text message yet. So, yeah, stuff does happen. There's so many operations that happen down there, in and around South America. It's like, South and Central America is just so much stuff that's going on that happened down there with CIA, Gladio, drugs. In South America, it was much more of human trafficking, gun running, and the drugs that came out of South America was much more cocaine, whereas the drugs that came out of Southeast Asia and Southwest Asia was heroin. Drugs still, nevertheless. I'm going to pause this for a second here. I'm going to mute myself and see if I can't raise her on her telephone. Hold on a sec, guys. It's very possible her phone's going straight to voicemail, so it's very possible that she's lost power and internet and everything because of a storm. So let's see here. If you guys have any questions that you want to, we can take a little sidetrack. Let's see here. Talk about the deep state attacking us here in America. I didn't see what she was talking about yesterday there, Minnesota Patriot. I did not see that, but I do see that. Let's see. I do. I'm going to shut up because I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to say anything. Let's see. I'm checking her chat as well, guys. If you guys have anything that you want to say to me up there, I've got you guys. I've got her chat open as well. I'm going to look something up here. Actually, I know a lot of you guys probably know this, but I'm not going to take for granted that you do. So I'm going to pull up a map so you can see where on the earth all this stuff was going on. Oh, there she's back. Okay. I was gonna show on a map where everything was because I was waiting.
Go ahead. That's a great idea because this needs to be like a history geography lesson. I'm not sure where I cut off. There's a horrible storm going through here right now.
Yeah, it's what you said, and I figured that that was kind of what had happened. So, let's see. Why isn't?
So did we get to the, did you hear me talking about Daniel Ortega?
That was gone. I don't think I heard you talk about that. No.
Okay. All right.
Let's see. Hide on your map. Okay. So, so Nicaragua is right here, that little country right there. And, you know, you see how where Cuba was, where you're talking about Cuba and a lot of the things that were flying, and then Florida's obviously right here. You know, you see how close in proximity all that stuff was.
It is.
Yeah. So, and then Colombia, obviously right here. And then Panama, which plays a huge role.
Correct.
And then, you know, you've got Louisiana, where all of Barry Seal's stuff was, and then Mena, Arkansas is basically right in there. And then of course you've got all the Bush family who was right here in southwestern or southeastern Texas.
Correct.
So I mean all this stuff is just right here.
Right there. Okay. So basically where we left off, you're gonna have basically three factions of the Sandinistas. One was concentrated on the urban terrain, one was concentrated in the countryside, and you kind of had a third guy emerge by the name of Daniel Ortega. And Daniel Ortega is the one that was most often referred to when you're talking about the Sandinistas. He eventually becomes notoriously attached to the Iran-Contra, as we'll explain. But basically, this is going on in the late 70s. And they don't communicate a lot with each other. They kind of off are doing their own recruiting type thing. But in 1972, there was this humongous earthquake. And 10,000 people, over 10,000 people are killed as a result of this earthquake. And I kind of made the comment that I think it's ironic that there seems to be a, and I'm not suggesting anything, but I do notice a pattern of earthquakes that occur in areas that are of strategic importance to us, and the pocketing of aid money that comes in as a result of the earthquake into very questionable hands and not to the people it's meant to serve. Well, this is exactly what happens in this area in Nicaragua. And that inflamed everything down there. So even the people who kind of just wanted to keep their head down and not be involved, all of a sudden are now intimately involved because not only did their house get destroyed, their government is stealing the money that all of these people from around the world are donating to help them rebuild. So now everybody, all the emotions are inflamed. So you're working towards the perfect storm.
Mm-hmm. So do you, Now, I'm guessing that you didn't want to say or suggest something to the notion that the earthquakes were deliberately.
I'm not making caused. That suggestion. I do think different natural phenomenon have many times in these investigations that I've done into local areas mm-hmm. been like a powder keg to kick off a major turn of events, just like we Agreed. Know what happened in Haiti. So there's a lot of scuttle right now about the earthquake they just had in Taiwan. Now, is that going to provide the opening for China to do whatever they want to do in the middle of this devastation? But you see how one could definitely make that argument. Mm-hmm. I'm not making that argument. I'm not a meteorologist. I don't know enough about
it. That's what I did in the Navy.
Yeah, I know that is. But I'm also not, I know that we have capability in the military to affect certain results. But I do want to point out, since I'm a pattern noticer, mm-hmm. that does seem to be something that is a reoccurring theme.
Yes.
Just putting it out there.
Let me just kind of, I'm going to piggyback on that for a second, because this is not an accident. Most people are unaware of this, but you know, everybody knows that the Middle East is, you know, kind of a dry and desolate place. It's the desert for Pete's sake. But that said, do you know that the driest period on Earth, or the driest period in 1,000 years, that happened in the Middle East, specifically in Iraq? Do you know when that was? 2002. It was the biggest drought in 1,000 years just prior to our invasion.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Imagine that. So the fact that there are earthquakes, and I don't necessarily know about the volcanoes, because that takes a special type of thing, a special type of technology that I don't know if they have, if that exists. But I do absolutely believe that they have the ability to, you know, with either lasers or some sort of pulses, whether call it HARP, call it something. I know that I absolutely believe that they have the technology to inflict and you know, have earthquakes. You know, look at Fukushima, look at a lot of things that have happened, that it's very suspicious.
Very suspicious.
Okay. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. All right. So businessmen were in the local area in Nicaragua are very resentful, because immediately, instead of giving the money that was coming in as aid, the government decides to put an emergency tax on the businessmen to basically generate other outside money so they could keep pocketing the international money. And these are the same businessmen that were devastated by the earthquake. So they just kind of heaped insult onto the injuries already incurred. So the Sandinistas see their chance to now launch an attack. So in December 1974, with all the chaos that has been generated and the disgruntledness of the population, they took a group of elite partygoers hostage. And the Somoza regime, which was under the leadership of the junior Anastasio, Louis' brother, was forced to pay a ransom to get the prisoners released from the Sandinistas. So the regime's backlash for that escapade is severe. The National Guard gets sent to the countryside to root out the terrorists. And as a couple of authors noted, they were engaged in extensive pillaging, arbitrary imprisonment, torture, rape, and summary execution of hundreds and hundreds of peasants, not even necessarily the trained people that had launched the attack. They're just wholesale going out and murdering people. And it's important to know that in this region, there's Catholic missionaries everywhere. It's predominantly a Catholic nation. It was at the time, and very rural. So the church immediately comes out and denounces and was documenting some of the atrocities that were occurring. So Somoza stood out as one of the worst human rights violators in the Western Hemisphere as a result of what went on in the aftermath. So by 1977, the church and other international bodies were condemning the regime of human rights violations. And of course, now you know we're into 77. This is Jimmy Carter. And right. He supposedly is focused on promoting human rights. So he basically starts putting pressure on the Somoza's regime to end the abuse and stop killing the peasants and to use the military for humanitarian aid. And also, Jimmy Carter basically is bribing him. He wants to send a whole bunch of humanitarian aid down there to basically buy him to stop killing his citizens, you know, because that makes all the sense in the world.
Of course.
But it kind of worked. And so Somoza stopped basically the terror campaign and actually reinstated freedom of the press. Not that you had a whole lot of reporters that survived, but hey, at least that's what he said. So in 1977, he suffered a heart attack and was out of commission for several months. And in his absence, other members of his cabinet began stealing all of the state money. So things get really crazy down there. And one of the newspapers that covered the opposition activities, basically the one of the ones that had detailed the human rights violations.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this basically, this reporter actually coming out and starting to report real news emboldens the Sandinistas. And so they kind of step up and you have another one of the government officials that ends up getting assassinated. And so this kind of sparks more round of international recrimination. And so you have basically one of the reporters that was working in there, he gets assassinated for speaking out. And it did look, just from a cursory look, because it was very difficult trying to find the local newspapers and getting translations. A lot of the people down there felt like that was a CIA-backed assassination, the one that was going to take the reporter out. I don't have any concrete evidence of that, but that was the common feeling down there because they were kind of just getting their feet set in this new freedom of speech thing and exercising it. And then the lead reporter gets assassinated.
Well, you know, a lot of the people down in Central and South America, they are very knowledgeable about CIA activities down there.
They're very knowledgeable.
Yeah. They know more about that. They probably forgotten more about that than regular U.S. citizens understand.
I would definitely agree with that. Mm-hmm. So in 78, Ortega's Sandinista faction went about attempting to unify the city, the urban, and the ones that he had been leading. And so they refer to them as guerrilla fighters, but by now they're about 5,000. And these are like, no kidding, trained people that can fight. So in August of 78, the Sandinistas disguised themselves as National Guardsmen and assault the National Palace and took the entire Nicaraguan Congress hostage. So this, I love this story because this is turning Operation Gladio on its head, because Operation Gladio CIA-backed troops always dress themselves as someone else and then accuse them of doing it.
Correct.
So this was them using the CIA's tactics against the CIA. So I absolutely love the story. So I take my wins where I can.
Yes.
So they demanded money and the release of all the Sandinista prisoners that the government had locked up. And basically the regime agrees to do that. Now, keep in mind, the president had just had his bout. He was out of had a medical emergency. So you're kind of dealing with the second string here. So the Sandinistas call for a national uprising in September, which is basically the next month, and begin to launch coordinated attacks in all of the urban cities, the big ones. So Carter thinks that he needs to go in to quell the violence. And there's an organization called the Organization of American States. And they agree. I'm sorry.
OAS.
Yeah. They agree to the U.S.'s proposal for political mediation. Somoza agreed to the mediation, but he rejects the proposal to institute free elections. So in 1979, the Carter administration ceased military aid to the National Guard and asked other countries to stop funding the Sandinistas. So basically stop funding both sides. And then the crisis spirals out of control. And I've told you how important it is to examine who the ambassador is during these operations. So in this particular case, we need to look at a guy by the name of James Thebergs. It's T-H-E-B-E-R-G-E. You will not be at all surprised to find out that he's a Columbia grad, an Oxford grad, and a German university grad.
No.
And Harvard, all four.
He hit the lotto.
He did. He's like the bonanza of all.
Columbia, Oxford,
Harvard, and Heidelberg University. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So,
economic advisor for the embassy in Argentina from 61 to 64.
Argentina, didn't they have a coup too?
Yeah, they had something like that down there. Something like that. Yeah. Let's see, 66 to, from 66 to 69, he was a senior economist for Inter-American Development Bank in Washington. A bank. Imagine that.
Well, but that's an important one, though.
Yeah.
That development bank is the one that was basically bribing different leaders. That's how they fund. So this is so important. Because once they coup a government, they have to have a source of income to keep them bought off. And that's what these developmental banks do.
That's what Perkins talked about.
Yes.
He also was in Brazil. Yeah.
And Brazil went through a coup as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the commonalities between some of the areas where he was and the coups, there's some common threads there as well. He also served as the Latin director on Nixon's Rockefeller's Commission on Critical Choices for America in 74 and 75.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's very well-rounded. He was appointed by Ford to be the ambassador of Nicaragua. The commission was so.
He served as the president of the Institute for Conflict and Policy Studies, a think tank based in Washington, D.C., from 77 to 79, and an advisor to Planning Research Corporation from 79 to 81, and advisor to the United States Department of Defense from 81 to 82. And then Reagan appointed him as ambassador to Chile in 82.
So.
I'm just saying all these, National Council, Atlantic Council. All these NGOs that are. I mean, this is how the CIA and NATO and Gladio. This is how they do all their stuff. It's all these organizations. It's all interwoven. and they make it appear.
Which is why you have to look at these ambassadors.
Right.
They are part of the network that is deployed for control.
Yes.
So this Nixon Rockefeller's Commission on Critical Choices for America, the commission was so important that Rockefeller actually resigned as governor of New York to serve on it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
It included the Vice President Gerald Ford, the Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, and the Secretary of Treasury George Shultz. The majority of the and minority leaders of both the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives, as well as many very high profile businessmen and educators, as well as Daniel Patrick Moynihan.
What a shock.
Yeah. So you can go back, and I just kind of cursory looked at that, but that was a critical document to be used as kind of a springboard for many things that came after that, that you were just mentioning as far as the NGOs go. It actually, in many ways, kind of was the roadmap to how they were going to, I'm going to use the word covertly, that's not the word they used, manipulate stuff behind the scenes for all of those people. And the fact that all of them were on that commission, you know, you've got the politicians, you've got the businessmen, you've got everybody on there.
I'm going to look this up here. Okay, so the Commission on Critical Choices for America, Nelson Rockefeller.
Let me just tell you some of the names of the panels. Energy and its relationship to ecology.
Yep.
Economics and world stability from the people who have screwed up the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. Food, health, and world population and the quality of life. Doesn't that sound like the WHO?
Mm-hmm.
Raw materials, industrial development, capital formation, employment, and world trade. The next one, international trade and monetary systems, inflation, and the relationship among differing economic systems. And the last one, change, national security and peace, and the quality of life of individuals and communities in the USA. They don't give a crap about your quality of life, nor do they give a crap about peace.
No, but that's what they want you to think. That's what they want you to think. You know, it's like, just as a parallel, it's like when you talked about the wildlife, the International Wildlife Fund. You know, they make it as though that it appears as though it's some altruistic organization, so that the world thinks, oh, these guys are so philanthropic. Meanwhile, what they're doing is they're actually killing off all the animals. They're using the villagers within this designated zone as target practice, and then once they clear all the unwanted things out, then they use it as a training facility to train mercenaries to go off and just do the nefarious activities that they need to get done.
That's it.
So
by the spring of 1979, the Sandinistas controlled various regions and had struck a deal with more moderate opponents of Somoza. And in June, the Sandinistas named members of the post-Somoza's government, including Ortega and two other Sandinistas, as well as other opposition leaders. So that month, the Sandinista fighters began to move into Managua and engaged in various shootouts with the National Guard. So they're getting much bolder. In July, the American ambassador to Nicaragua informed Somoza that he should leave the country to minimize bloodshed. On July 17th, Somoza departed for the U.S. The Congress elected pro-Somoza Francisco, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, Arroyo U-R-O-U-Y-O. But
Uryo?
When he announced that he would stay in office until the end of Somoza's term, there was an immediate rebellion again. And he was basically forced out of office the next day. Wow. So the National Guard collapsed and many fled in exile to Guatemala, Honduras, and Costa Rica. And that's
which are all basically border Nicaragua.
That's an important tidbit for later on, because what we find is there are terrorist training camps in Guatemala, Honduras, and Costa Rica. As a matter of fact, a lot of the drug running into the United States was done from Costa Rica locations. And the fact that the dispersing of these trained mercenary National Guard people from Nicaragua ended up in those locations, it's kind of like, instead of following the money, you follow the mercenaries. So the Sandinistas entered the capital on July 19th and established a provisional government. And over the course of this entire time that all of this fighting is going on, over 50,000 people were killed. That was 2% of the Nicaraguan population. And so these CIA operations of these fake governments that they set up for dictators so that our industrialists can go in and rob, rape, and steal from these countries have a real cost in the lives of the people that are involved. And we've done this, obviously, all over the world. So the National Guard, let's see. And I already mentioned that they basically become terrorists in those other countries. President Carter met with the provisional government at the White House in September 1979 and asked Congress for additional aid to Nicaragua to help the transition to this new government. This required reports every 6 months from the Secretary of State on the status of the human rights in Nicaragua after they just murdered 50,000 people because of the CIA instituted coup. And now they're going to hold them accountable. Now that somebody they can't control is in office in Nicaragua, we need a report. I just want to point out the ludicrousness of all of this. And basically stipulated that the aid would be terminated if you don't submit your reports. So if
that sounds a lot like that sounds a lot like something that Biden would have said to Zelensky, or to the guy of to the president of Ukraine. Well, either the prosecutor's going to be fired, or we're not going to give you your money.
Yeah,
I mean, so it's parallel.
So if foreign forces in Nicaragua threatened the security of the United States or any of its Latin American allies, the U.S. was primarily concerned about the effect of the countries like El Salvador, which would have, soon after this happens, they go into their own civil war. The Sandinistas did not implement Soviet-style centralized socialism, as basically the CIA had, that was their talking points at the time. You cannot let the Sandinistas overtake the government, because of course the government had been bought by the CIA, because they kept saying that they were communistic in nature. So, but instead of the, they set up basically the public-private model, and they address land reform and widespread poverty in both the rural and urban areas. And the Sandinistas also began a literacy campaign to begin educating all of the children in the country. And they did all of the things that supposedly all of the Democrats use as their talking points in America when they, or even the Republicans for that matter, when they are stressing the need to have democratic ideals and how a democracy actually works, the Sandinistas actually began implementing all of that stuff. So, however, everything changed almost overnight once Ronald Reagan got in office. the economic assistance to Nicaragua was halted in early 1981, and Reagan authorized the CIA to fund an exile paramilitary force that was had relocated to Honduras, which is basically their, you know, the National Guard for all intents and purposes, basically transitioned. You could have called it a country's military, but it transitioned into a Gladio style operation after the event of the Sandinistas coming to power, because now they're in Honduras and Costa Rica. And there they began training as basically paramilitary forces, i.e. Operation Gladio. So
I'm going to pause you for a quick second, because this is a question that I get frequently. Most of the time it's done in like the comment section, but this is a live question. And it says, all of this information is great, but how do we put an end to it?
Okay, we probably could come to that. Let's go through this. I don't want to stop in the middle of sure. the history lesson to be able, that's a good way to conclude okay. where we need to go with this. Hold on just a second. Because otherwise we'll get distracted.
No, understood. I just didn't want to, I wanted to, this, cause I get the, cause I get this question a lot from, yeah. from most people. So, yeah.
so do I. First of all, you have to recognize this all happened.
Yes.
If you're going to stop it. And most people don't even know it happened. Or they don't know how they've been manipulated, which is why they can continue to be manipulated today about Ukraine and Israel and all of the other crap that's going on and the stuff going on in Russia. If you don't understand history, we are going to keep repeating it. So let's see where I was at. The economic assistance to Nicaragua was halted. Reagan authorized the CIA to go in there and basically start training the paramilitary forces in Honduras to go back into Nicaragua. And they deploy a whole contingent of CIA trainers down there to basically get these guys reconditioned to go basically take back Nicaragua for the CIA. So the U.S. begins waging a covert war on the Sandinistas throughout the 1980s. And that's why the whole term of Contras is garbage. These people were the Sandinistas after their ancestral freedom fighter guy, and they fought successfully the CIA-installed dictators and had finally secured their freedom. They had finally began instituting democracy reforms, and was moving forward in a healthy way. The United States government under Ronald Reagan said that's not going to be allowed. So largely as a result of the Sandinistas having to defend itself against the Operation Gladio style troops that are all out, they eventually begin calling them the Contras, these covert operators. And they start diverting funds to them. So eventually the Sandinistas lose power because they're simply overwhelmed by the viciousness of the attacks that are now coming onto the Sandinista government in Nicaragua. So they lose power in 1990. And the Sandinista revolution dramatically improved the quality of life for the Nicaraguans. The Sandinistas were in power only for a little more than a decade. Defending itself against the CIA-backed Contras aggression siphoned off needed resources for what should have been the reform of the country and the benefit of the citizens in that country. The Sandinistas gained control again in the 2006 timeframe under the leadership of Daniel Ortega. And he had dramatically changed for whatever reason. And he ends up basically assuming a more of a dictatorship style. was a real disappointment to the rest of the Sandinista movement that had done so well during the time that they were installed. So go back to the 80s, and now I've just given you the whole lesson of what was going on in Nicaragua. And you have the, and I know you know about the whole Iran side of things. I don't know if you want to jump in here now that we've got that part set.
Well, I mean, you know, people think that Iran was the enemy. Iran is just a controlled, it's a controlled area by the CIA, and it's the people of Iran are actually good people. The Persian people, I mean, they love the United States. They want to come over here, but the government, the mullahs, and all this other stuff. Part of the mechanism of control, by these NGOs and by the CIA and all this other stuff. It's all done to have a boogeyman that we have to fight. You know, and Iran is constantly said that, you know, they're the enemy, and you know we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have a nuclear war, and you know. You got Iran and Israel, and then they always use the term "death to America." Death to America. That's they want us to die. Well, you know, if you go over to that part of the world and you say "death to America," that's like just saying, you know what, I'm going to go kick his ass. I mean, that's basically what that's the similar. It's like, yeah, they don't necessarily mean death to the United States. That's like a figure of speech of like, oh, I don't really like them, and I don't like what they're doing. And frankly speaking, I think the people of Iran actually have justifiable reasons not to like the things that the United States does to them.
We definitely have overthrown their government before.
Twice.
And I want to point out specifically as it relates to Nicaragua that from 80 to 88, the Iran war and Iraq war was going on. So they're over there fighting each other.
Yeah, so, because the United States actually paid Saddam Hussein to go to war with Iraq. And that's why he had the anthrax, because we gave him the anthrax in the event that that Iran overran their positions.
So in the Iran-Iraq war, our comp was basically making bank off of the Iraqi side, and Israel and a few other European countries was making bank off the Iran side. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, the whole Iraqi-Iran war was a construct of these globalists in order to gin up more demand. And what happened as it related to the Nicaraguans is that you have the intersection of arms trafficking in the Gladio network and weapons trafficking in the Gladio network intersect. So the South America had became, after Cuba fell, it moved down to South and Central America, the drug corridors. So you've got drug trafficking coming through all of those Central American countries. And now that you've got a war going on, remember, all wars are fought for a couple of different reasons, but one of which is weapons trafficking, because there's always lost weapons, and those lost weapons are trafficked into efforts like what went on in Nicaragua. So all of those Contras that were down there training that used to be National Guard no longer had access to weapons. Well, we've got to get them weapons if the CIA is going to get them to come back in and basically take back over Nicaragua. So
Well,
what do they have? Well, they have drugs because they're the drug corridor. So if I can swap drugs for weapons, then this is the best of both worlds right here. So I can skim off weapons. And this literally is what Operation Gladio was all about. If you go back to Afghanistan, if you go back to Vietnam, if you go back to Korea, every one of these conflicts allows for black market weapons trafficking. Mm-hmm. The disruption of people is human trafficking. And yes. Generally, they're all fought around poppy fields, which is drug trafficking.
Correct.
So,
but the mechanism that they use to sell it to the people is hostages. Oh, well, they've got hostages. We need to, they've got our people hostage. So we need to do what we can to save our people.
Well, that's so, like blackmail, right? Isn't that the grease?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
it all goes hand in hand.
Yeah. And this is a partial, I'm not going to answer the question. I'm going to let you do that. But this is a partial question. The main thing that we can do with this information is utilize it and overlay it onto our existing situation so that we know not to be fooled by it.
So, yeah, back to the question. I will tell you that the amount of research that I have done and allows you to do is find patterns, find similarities that you could not see before. And for example, I'm going to speak for both Liza, Bridget, and I. As soon as the Russian terror attack happened, number one, it's a terror attack. So there's about a 95% chance that that's a Gladio operation. Correct. So where do you immediately start looking? Who was involved? Where did they come from? What was the mechanism that they used to effect the terror attack? So one of the first elements that came out of that was that these people, Russia had tracked them transiting Turkey, both originally, and then they did an ADVON team into Russia and came back. Now, from a military perspective, I'll tell you that if you are in a particular training location, you send your ADVON team to do eyes on, and then you come back and you train to those eyes on most current intel, that we know, because we've done the investigation into Operation Gladio, Turkey has the largest Operation Gladio force in all of NATO. And we also know that they have extensive training camps all over. So if they're transiting Turkey, that tells me you just moved up the percentage of the chance that that was an Operation Gladio. They transited through Ukraine in particular areas. And if you look at where the CIA in that New York Times article said that they had located those secret locations for training and covert activity along the border of Russia, well, guess what? They come right through there. Mm-hmm. So, and where were they headed when they left? Right back there. So after an event, if you're in special forces, you have both staging areas and recovery areas. And after the event, you will return to your recovery area, and that was Ukraine. And so everything about that event,
I lost you there. You're frozen.
That area to do that type of operation, of course, is Ukraine. Colonel, let me pause you there for a second.
You said everything there, and then you froze. So I missed about probably 20 seconds of what you said.
Everything about the terrorist attack in Russia screamed Operation Gladio from a framing perspective. And as a result of that, you immediately do not fall for any of the lies coming out of your government's mouth. So the blaming of ISIS, absolutely discounted initially. And let me also tell you something else. The United States actually created ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they throw ISIS out there, it means absolutely nothing, because that would just be another. So is it the Nazis that the CIA funds, or is it the ISIS that the CIA funds? Who gives a crap? It's still the CIA. You see what I'm saying? They're splitting hairs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. As long as you know where the source of this stuff is coming from, you can no longer be fooled. And if you can no longer be fooled, at some point, us calling them out on it is going to allow them to know we can't be played anymore. We're not going to be swayed. It doesn't matter how many dead babies there are or how many women you kill, because that's their favorite targets. You're still not going to convince us it wasn't you. It's still you doing the trigger pulling.
Yeah. I was just looking up the to see if I could find where McCain makes secret trip to Syria to meet U.S. military and Kurds.
And so the other thing in all of this is I had a field day with AFRICOM the other day when Matt Gaetz had General Langley in front of him, asking him how many coups had been committed where the person being installed as a dictator had been trained in by the United States. I about fell over dead when I heard Matt Gaetz say that. I actually tried to contact his office twice. I don't know if Matt Gaetz knows the extent of Operation Gladio, because we're well over 50 is the number. But in the conversation, it was so embarrassing. That general should be demoted to a lieutenant. Well, it's all about our core values. What core values allow you to murder people and install dictators? I don't know what core value that is, because I don't share it.
No.
But evidently, a while back, Matt Gaetz had tapped to...
You froze again.
There we go. We kind of zoomed
out. You froze again. You froze again. You said evidently Matt Gaetz.
I saw when it froze. Yeah.
Gotcha. My apologies.
That's okay. I just stopped talking.
No problem.
I'm watching it now.
So my apologies. I just want to save your breath.
We're just freelancing it now. So I'm
trying to help. Yeah, she's still frozen. Not sure what's going on here. Yeah, she's... I don't know about that as much as it is. It's S.J. Adam. I'm not sure if it's that, or if she's just in an area where there's like a storm, because I think it's probably that. But she'll be back. She's not going to go far. There's she's got way too much but good information. Now I typically would agree with you guys on the fact that you guys in the in her chat, they're saying the same thing. They're jamming her signal. So everybody's chat saying the same thing. My chat's like, they don't want her talking. They don't want this info out. CIA's listening. I'm sure blocking. And her chat's like, they're jamming her signals. She's over the target. We all think alike. So we're going to give it a minute. I know she'll be back. But it's like, I've here. Let me share. This is from ABC. I'll go ahead and share this. Not sure if you guys heard that or not. Where is it? Oh, there she's back. Okay.
Oh,
all right.
Really,
I was just
storming.
Gonna.
I have like an entire river going down my driveway.
Ah, okay. I was, while you were gone, I was going to just show this article about McCain makes secret trip to Syria. Visit comes as U.S.-led coalition continues to regain territory from ISIS. Yeah, as he freaking created ISIS, douchebag. I don't say his name, Mr. No Name.
Anyway, I think that is. Number one, we need to know what our history is. That's the number one lesson out of all of this. Even if it requires us to go and relearn what our actual history was, as opposed to what we were lied to about, number one. And then number two, we need to do everything within our ability to call people out for it, which is why I hammered AFRICOM on, they have an account on X. And I mean, I was like all day long, hello, hello, hello. And just calling out what you did in the Congo, what you did in Chad, what you did in Mozambique. Here's the stuff that was done in South Africa. Every single one of those countries over there that we were involved in cooing their leadership, those people were trained. I can give Matt Gaetz the list because they were trained at the School of Americas that was moved up to Fort Benning. It wasn't closed because Congress didn't have the wherewithal to close it after they had found out that they had trained the 12 dictators they installed in South America. And that doesn't even include Latin America.
Right.
We have been a dictator producing factory for a very long time.
Under the guise of bringing democracy, which is a joke. Because we're never, we never have been a democracy. We never were a democracy.
Destroyed democracies.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we are a democratic style of government from the standpoint that we have, you know, majority rules within the chamber. But the only time that we have democracy is on election day. Outside of that, we are a republic where we are of laws. And inside the chamber, it's democracy from the standpoint of when they vote, it's majority rule. But that's it.
But it isn't even really democracy there in the Senate. I mean, you still have to have 2/3. It is
that's
not
right.
Majority rule. So, well,
but my point is that that is a democratic style of government. It's not, it is not democracy. So, correct. And that was what I meant to say. So, thank you for correcting me.
Yeah, and. There, we have never stood up for democracy. We've destroyed democracy around the world.
Correct.
And they label things like the National Endowment for Democracy as a mockery of what they're actually doing. The National Endowment for Democracy has never done anything other than destroy democracy and install dictator-like, just like Zelensky. What am I going to do? I'm going to cancel elections. I'm going to close down free speech. I'm going to burn churches down. That's not democracy, even by their definition of democracy.
No, it is not. No. And the reason, and, you know, Perkins actually identified this in his book. He talked about the reason that they like dictators is because they can control the outcome when there's a dictator. If it's a democratically elected government, that they can't, that is a country that is essentially a loose cannon and they can't control it.
So what we're talking about is fascism.
Correct.
And it's the marrying up of the corporate entities in the West, primarily in the UK and the US, with a centralized dictatorship. And when the two marry, that becomes fascist, totalitarian, like Mussolini, so that you have the trappings of the government. People don't have to do anything other than be a figurehead and get bought off because they don't have to manage society. The international businesses do that for you. They basically arrange the deck chairs on the Titanic. And the government becomes an enforcer of the oligarchs.
That's right.
And that's the creation of a fascist government. And if you go back and you read the book, Fascism International or International Fascism, that book outlines exactly what they're doing. That is the government that they envision as one world government is that of fascism. So they have the round table controlling everything geographically, and you have the oligarchs that are around basically manipulating everything, and then you have all of us as the slaves.
Right. I think the answer to you, the answer that you are suggesting is that we need to hold them. We need to bring this stuff out into the public domain, and we need to hold these people accountable and say it loud and be obnoxious about it. Because if people don't know that it exists, you know, then they can get away with it. But we have a responsibility to get this information out and speak it as loud as possible. And that, if that means getting a hold of people like Gates, like you tried to do, that's an important part, because, you know, there are good politicians out there at the national level. There are good politicians at the national level, not a lot of them, but there are some good ones. And I believe that Gates is a whole hell of a lot better than Eyepatch McCain. Or whatever the hell his name is. I hate even saying his name. What's his name? Crenshaw. I can't stand that guy. I deliberately try to avoid saying his name. He's just a douchebag. But that's one thing that we can do. And another thing you can do is educate people around you about what's happening around the world. You know, we have this false impression that we're America and we're awesome and we do everything good and we're a force for good in the world. And you know what? No, we are not. And that pains me to say that. We as a country are not. I mean, we do good things. We have to do good things. And the military, for the most part, is the military. I would argue that the military is more does more humanitarian work than it does military actions. The military actions are more done by the private contractors because they can do things that aren't, or they're not subject to the Geneva Convention.
That's a true statement. And most military, even when they're involved in these operations, which Special Forces certainly has been, they don't know what the context is that they're doing it in. For example, we were brainwashed to believe that the Sandinistas were communists. We were brainwashed to believe that Castro was a communist. We were brainwashed to believe that Lumumba was a communist. Ho Chi Minh was a communist. The original Kim Sr. was a communist. Not a single one of those entities that I just mentioned to you were a communist when they were dubbed as a communist. Mm-hmm. Not a single one of them. Did they turn to the Soviet Union for arms when the CIA invaded them? Absolutely. Does that make them a communist? No. That makes them a survivalist. If the only other major arms manufacturer that will sell arms to you happens to be the Soviet Union, and you have the United States CIA Gladio operators invading your country, you have no other choice but to go ask for arms and aid from the other superpower.
Whoever that you can get it from.
A communist, that made you a survivalist.
Exactly. And I'm going to say something, guys, I'm not targeting any person out there when I say this, but we need to get rid of the fear of what's going to happen to me if I speak up. Because as long as you operate under the notion that, oh, well, if I say something, they're going to come take my house, or they're going to come arrest me, or they're going to come and do this, then you are playing into the fear that they have put you in. If everybody at all at the same time engaged in mass noncompliance and started started saying this stuff on the on a widespread scale, they can't, they don't have enough resources to come after us all. They just don't. But you have to be, you have to check your fear at the door, and you have to have some courage. And it, is it possible that you could, that it could cost you some stuff? Absolutely. What did it cost some of the founding fathers when they were standing up against the British? Some of them, it cost them their life. You need to make the decision. Is this worth your life? Is this worth dying for? Are you willing to lay it all on the line for this? And if you're not, then don't ask the question of what can I do to stop this? Because this, the information is good, but what can we do to stop it? There's some hard decisions are going to have to be made here. And you know what? I mean, it just so happens that it falls on our shoulders and our generation to do it. So, because there's so many generations before us have come and gone and they've never done anything. And the longer it goes, the harder it's going to be, the harder it's going to get.
That's true.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, and I don't, I'm not picking on anybody specifically. I'm just telling you, this is, you know, what price are you willing to pay to make this so that your grandchildren, your children and grandchildren don't have to deal with or endure the harder it's going to be if as this continues to fester.
True.
So you wanted to know, I mean, that's the answer to the question, is we have to get out there and talk about it. We have to get out there and be loud and be vocal. And does risk come with that? Absolutely.
Yep.
So anyway, that's my answer to the question. I'm asking your thoughts on my solution.
No, I've said as much myself.
I
think it's completely different when you go to a town hall or when you call your congressman and you say, "Hey, have you ever heard of Operation Gladio? Do you know what the CIA is involved in? Do you know the kind of stuff that they do? What's your opinion on that? Do you know that they're knocking off heads of state? Why are you still funding that?" And open a book. Listen to the podcast that I do on the book reviews. Join your thing on Friday night that you talk about history. And get yourself educated to a point where you can have an articulate conversation with your representative about how you want your money spent, and call them out when they make votes that you disagree with. Go volunteer to work on someone's campaign that's going to stand up against that. I have found some people that you can't get to sit down, and then I have found a whole lot of people you can't get to stand up.
That's true.
And I think that those of us who have the ability to do the digging into these organizations and provide you with the information, we're all hoping that you take the information and do something important with it. Make it, but that's kind of the hope that I have anyway.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, you and I have taken the steps of creating a channel. You know, we don't have large audiences, but we have enough of an audience that our voices are heard louder than some others, certainly louder than my neighbor who's not saying anything to anybody. And we're trying to provide information to arm you guys with so that you can become educated enough that you can, have intelligent conversations and educate people. We don't just do this because we just want to like talk about it. And I mean, there is probably a little bit of joy when we talk about it because this is a passion that we have. And it's like, you know, hearing new things and taking and expanding our mind into new areas. There's a little bit of joy that comes from that. But at the end of the day, the joy comes from expanding my knowledge, not from the content of the information. So, because the content of the information is extraordinarily serious and it's not good. It's like that. What was that? What's that one movie where it says, are we the baddies?
So let me just jump on that. Then I need to run out of here. But
cool.
The conversation that we had on the Badlands show earlier about Turkey. So I was deployed to Northern Iraq and to Southern Turkey in 1991. And reading through several months ago when I first started digging into Turkey and the Kurds and the Grey Wolves attack on the Kurds, they did horrendous things to the Kurdish people. They would dress up as the Kurds and attack their own citizens as in Turkish towns, pretending to be Kurds so that they had the will of the people behind them to go massacre more Kurds. And the horrendous toll. So this was all perpetrated by our CIA. Our CIA was behind all of it. Their motivation was multiple fold. It had a lot to do with resources and blah, blah, blah. So what I kept thinking in my head was there was a colonel that was kidnapped in Turkey. And they were kidnapped by people. You could make the argument were part of the Kurdish paramilitary capability. And on the face of that, you're like, well, the Kurds are bad, or at least that one was bad. But to the Kurdish population, who all know that this entire operation from the 1950s on of massacring them repeatedly is funded by the USA CIA. And they were all of the Turkish military who oversee these programs are trained in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I was deployed there. I walked downtown in Adana. I ate in the cafeterias in the side streets. At any time in my military uniform, one of those people could have came by and murdered or kidnapped me because of something the CIA did. And I'm there thinking I'm doing something good in rescuing the Kurdish people that had fled Northern Iraq into Turkey, thinking they were going to be gassed by Saddam Hussein. That's right. The whole reason I'm there. We're relocating people from Turkey because Turkey hates Kurds, but they had nowhere else to go and be protected. So our job was to resettle them back in their towns and then leave. But what our CIA does puts every single one of us who ever goes to a foreign country in danger. Because you know where the second largest Grey Wolf contingency is in Europe?
Turkey.
In Germany.
Germany?
In Germany.
Germany, okay.
These people are everywhere. And they incite violence. And the people they incite violence against want retribution. And in many cases, I don't blame them.
Amen.
And they view us no different than the CIA because we pay for the CIA.
Well, they are
putting every one of us in danger.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I think they put the military in extraordinary danger.
I agree. No, and that's a topic of conversation we can have on a whole nother level because, you know, I'm going to share something with you offline. There's a gentleman that I've begun to follow, and he's extraordinarily knowledgeable. Him and he's with a group of guys, and they're all like lieutenant colonels, you know, either from Air Force, Army, and whatnot. But you know, they are a wealth of information, and they have given me a very they've given me perspective that I never had before. Certainly. From an officer standpoint, and I think that you would probably very much agree with a lot of the things that they have, that they talk about. I watched a program that they did last night talking about the military readiness, and how the military readiness of the United States military has been, has deliberately been debilitated to the point of non-combat combat ineffective.
It has been compromised.
Yeah. Yeah. We have no, we are, our military is combat ineffective, primarily as a result of DEI. You know, DEI is the mechanism that they have used to
it's much bigger than that.
I agree.
Long before DEI ever became an issue.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, well, so on that note, we'll go ahead and call it a day. And I may not be able to do next week. I'll let you know. I think I may be having to go out of town. I'm not 100% sure, but if we don't do next week, then it'll be the week after. So
okay, sounds good.
But yes, ma'am. So you enjoy your afternoon. Thank you for your time, and apologize for everybody for you know, the food bar.
For Mother Nature and our storm.
Yes, exactly. So, and getting this thing up and running. So apologize for the technical difficulties, but hopefully we'll get it figured out before next time. So right, thank you, everybody. And look forward to seeing you again for part six. So all right. Take care, everybody.
All right. Bye.